WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are taking a little respite on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour here this week. We'll be back after it again on the 18th next Friday. It is bye week around here. I had some travel plans, although I think I'm going to be hanging locally here this week. But we will be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour at Pappas. All of it brought to you by our friends at Maryland Lottery, as well as our friends at Goodwill and Window Nation. I'll have some Maryland scratch-offs to give away, some Raven scratch-offs. Had a $50 winner at a Greenmount Station last week. We were not as lucky at Drug City, although we did have some winners at Drug City, some $5 and $10 winners. We were there last week. Great, great show. With Gina Shock from the Go-Go's, my dear friend John Allen from Charm City Devils and Stone Horses and Child's Play, talking drum stuff in East Baltimore. And it was an East Baltimore hootenanny. At some point, I bet Luke Jones has never been to Drug City. So when I say Drug City to you, hey, by the way, I used to remember driving through middle of Pennsylvania, and there was a giant sign in York that said drugs on the way up to Hershey. When I was 10 years old, I thought that was the funniest thing, but it never struck me that we had a place called Drug City. But most people outside of Dundalk are not familiar with the joys of Drug City, but I had me a crab cake over there and a good time. And local is everything, right? And we got bye week here, so we got other things to talk about, right? Other things other than will Lamar pass the ball? Will Rashad Bateman ever fulfill his first round draft pick status and all that? But in the meantime, pretty good football team here right now, and an interesting year to be making January plans, because given the schedule, given their health, this is a level of Raven prosperity that, you know, I would say you'd have to harken back to 2019 to feel like this about a team in November. I remember 19, I went to Hawaii. After the only time in my life I've been to Hawaii, after the Seattle game, and there was a level of, hey, it is Pete Russell Wilson on the road in Seattle. They're pretty good. I don't know that they're going to beat any team that we're going to feel like they're really good here the rest of the way, but there is going to be there's going to be a Festivus here. I have a full feeling about that. I'm holding my plans in January to see if Chad Steele let me in.
Yeah, at this point, I mean, as you mentioned in our previous conversation, short of something catastrophic, short of health of multiple elite players on this roster going down, they're 6-3. They're ahead of the Bengals by a game. They have the early tiebreaker on the Bengals. They're 2-0 in the division. Cincinnati's 0-3. They're going to make the playoffs. I mean, barring something that no one can anticipate at this point, like an injury to Lamar Jackson, or, talking about Buffalo right now, if Josh Allen's elbow is worse than the initial indications were, that something like that can alter the season of any team. But beyond that worst case scenario kind of situation, Ravens are in great position now. They're 6-3, getting healthy, certainly ascending on the defensive side of the ball, offensive line ascending, running game ascending, passing game, we'll see how that plays out. And again, a big part of that is just going to be getting Mark Andrews back, as far as the Ravens getting a little more consistent there. But it's a lot to like about this football team right now. And I think the interesting thing, when you look at the stretch the Ravens have had, the Thursday night game at Tampa Bay gives you a chance to, Ravens fans, a chance to take stock of the rest of the league that Sunday, right? Same for the Monday night game. It'll be the same thing for the bye week, where, another Sunday afternoon where you can just sit back and watch the rest of the league. And it really is a reminder of just how much parity, mediocrity, whatever you want to call it, that there really is in this league. And I think Sunday was a great example of that, of how many close games you saw, and you're seeing more close games, a higher volume of close games than ever. With what we're seeing, that, even, the few teams that we consider to be elite, Buffalo, Kansas City, and the AFC, you look at those two teams and they showed vulnerability, the Bills losing to the Jets, and give the Jets credit. And
the Jets aren't bad, by the way. They're okay.
By the way, I will say this. I know, talking to a high ranking member of the organization, probably 3 or 4 weeks after that season opening win against the Jets, I was just talking to that individual about, where the Ravens were, where the rest of the AFC was. And they made mention at that point, and this was probably the second week of October, somewhere in that neighborhood, about a month ago. And they said, you watch, the Jets are going to be pretty good. They said, I have no idea about their quarterback situation, Zach Wilson, which, let's face it, the Jets aren't winning because of him. But he said, this individual said that Yeah, their defense is good and getting better. They've got some really talented young players, and they really gave a lot of credit to Robert Saleh. So, you know, yeah, I mean, that week one game, which, you know, it's week one. It's always weird, right? I mean, you can think back to teams looking great week one and they end up not being any good and vice versa. But, you know, that's a win that has aged favorably for the Ravens, even if it was Joe Flacco, you know, the backup quarterback for the Jets playing in that one. But you look at the league, you know, Buffalo now with Allen's elbow, who knows? And Kansas City, while Patrick Mahomes did what he needed to do, and you know, this'll, you know, it's funny because you and I always debate about, you know, how much throwing is too much. And I've never said that a team should be throwing the ball 60 plus times. Well, the Chiefs had to throw the ball 60 plus times to beat the Titans on Sunday night. And that was a game that, you know, Tennessee, a team that's built certainly not the same as the Ravens, but, you know, from this, a similar cloth, let's say, right? I mean, a team that's going to try to run the ball, certainly with Derrick Henry. Ravens don't have a back like him, but the Titans don't have Lamar Jackson, and they're going to try to play great defense. And, you know, you saw how that played out for Tennessee, even with a quarterback who could not make any plays with his arm whatsoever. You know, they had a chance and, you know, could have, should have won that football game, you know, if you really think about it. So, you know, the overall point there is, okay, I'm still not ready to put the Ravens ahead of either of those two teams, but is the gap between those two teams and the Ravens as big as we might have thought 3 weeks ago? I'm not so sure now. So, and that's a good thing. You know, it's okay to be third in the conference if you're trending upward.
But I would say the gap's enormous if there's no Gus Edwards and there's no if there's no Mark Andrews. I mean, where the way the team went out and beat the Saints the other night with that offense, they're not a January team with what we saw Monday night. They're a January team on the hope of a winning January team. I'm talking about
right. Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, what we saw Monday night. I mean, they're a playoff team. I mean, they're third in the conference right now. I mean, they're going to make the playoffs again, barring one of those season altering developments that any team it could sustain at any point. But yeah, you're right. But at the same time, I think Sunday was a good day for those looking for hope, and not that it's hopeless. I mean, I'm not, when I have questioned where the Ravens stack up in January with their offense, that's not to say that that means I think they're going to get their butts kicked in January. It's a question of how great their chance is of beating teams like that in January. I think Sunday was a good day in that department. Not that you're wishing ill will on Josh Allen, the health of his elbow, but that's a factor. And even before that, I mean, you know, he got hurt at the very end of the game. He didn't play very well. You know, that looked a little more like 2020 Josh Allen, let's say, which was a little more up and down. In the case of Kansas City, it's still the question of their defense. And, you know, I mean, you know, even though Patrick Mahomes was phenomenal at the end of the game when he needed to be, but, you know, you still look at their wide receivers, you know, maybe not the same issue as the Ravens per se, but, you know, they still miss Tyreek Hill. You know, they have to do it a different way now. So, but at the same time, you know, you look at that and say, yeah, there's nothing to be overly fearful about. You know, it's just a matter of where the Ravens stack up with those teams. And by the way, it's the second week of November. You know, the playoffs are still 2 months away. So you have plenty of time to get better, improve. You mentioned, I mean, certainly health is a big factor. And, you know, not that Mark Andrews or Gus Edwards aren't going to be back. They'll be back. But you want to get healthy and stay healthy. And the Ravens have certainly not avoided the injury bug altogether, as people would have hoped after what happened last year, but they are a healthier team than they were a year ago at this time. And you made mention of probably the most optimistic you felt about the Ravens, you know, going back to 2019 at this point in the season. I think 2020 first 6 or 7 weeks felt really good until Ronnie Stanley went down. And then that obviously changed. You know, as you famously said at the time, that you didn't think they could win a Super Bowl at the time, losing Ronnie Stanley. And I think that was a very valid position to have at that point in time. So you have him back, you know, and he looks like Ronnie Stanley again. So that's a good thing. But, you know, I just think you look at the rest of this league. It's so, first of all, it's so week to week. I mean, the Saints and the Raiders, a good example of that, you know, as far as what we saw the Saints do against the Raiders. And, you know, suddenly you're saying, oh, no, I mean, look at the Ravens going in there playing a team that's playing much better. And, you know, the Ravens handled them. But, you know, you see these situations where it's like a juggernaut and then they're not or a team looks left for dead, and then
well, look at the Eagles right now. The Eagles have won the Super Bowl already, right? And it's not even Thanksgiving, and that changes dramatically once they take on a loss or two or wherever they're going to be. Then they have to go win big games in January. I mean, it's nice you pad your schedule. It's nice that you can put yourself in a position, but then once January comes, it's about health. It's about weather. It's about if all the Ravens can do is run the football and you can't stop it, you're not going to beat them. So stopping the Ravens from running the football should be all these other teams' concerns. That's what Kansas City should be concerned about and Buffalo should be concerned about, is stopping them from running, because they're not going to go into a game looking to throw it 40 times. They're not. Not in January, not anytime. They're going to look to run the football. And if they can do that, they'll beat you if you can't stop them.
I mean, if you can't stop them entirely, sure. But I will say the caveat is also that the Ravens have to stop the other team then, because Tennessee was a perfect example. Derrick Henry ran all over the Chiefs. They didn't win.
This is why you get Roquan Smith, right?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, and again, I'll continue to say they're going to have to throw the football and throw it well. That doesn't mean 50 times. It means you have to be efficient and you need to be able to make plays in the passing game. So I'm not going to move off of that, but sure, the Ravens' formula for how they win in January is going to be a lot of running the ball and stopping. You know, you're not going to stop Buffalo entirely, you're not going to stop Kansas City entirely, but it's getting some stops, right? Which some teams have shown no ability to do, and then, you know, that's when they hang 40 points on you. So, you know, I
gotta get to know the Bills punter.
Yeah, sure. I mean we talked about this years ago. I mean, as much as the game's changed, even though it's funny because we've talked so much about offense, scoring's down, you know, it's returned to a level of where it was about 5 years ago. So, you know, we've kind of seen offense just go up. And I think the pandemic year probably had something to do with that in terms of empty stadiums and home field advantage kind of going away entirely. I certainly, we've talked about two high safeties and you know, some of the defensive adjustments we've seen teams make around the league that have slowed some of these passing games. But we talked about this a decade ago when the Ravens would go into Foxborough and they faced Tom Brady and the Patriots. And, you know, you're thinking, how are you going to stop them? The idea was, you know, can your defense get a few stops over the course of the game? And can your offense score 30 points? You know, that was kind of the formula, or score 27 points, let's say. You know, that was kind of the formula for beating Tom Brady and the Patriots. Easier said than done. The Ravens did it a couple times, which is more than most teams could do. But that's kind of what you're looking to with playing a Kansas City or playing a Buffalo. They don't have to do that until January. So, again, lots of time to work on things and get better and hopefully stay healthy and just stack wins. And who knows how it plays out? I mean, Buffalo's 6-2, Kansas City 6-2, the Ravens are 6-3. You know, they're a game back in the loss column right now. Buffalo does have a head-to-head, so that's something to keep in mind. There's only one bye. So really, you know, there's really no race to be number two in the conference anymore. I mean, other than just, you know, you're going to play the last seed in the first round, but, you know, we'll see how that plays out. But I think, again, you look at this league every week, it is such a week-to-week league. It is such a matchup-driven league. You know, some teams match up really well. I mean, we haven't even mentioned the Bengals, how awful they looked against Cleveland in that Monday night game on Halloween. And I get it. Carolina's a disaster, although they're not as big of a disaster as Indianapolis, by the way, which we'll talk about that in a moment. But look how the Bengals came out, and they absolutely pummeled the Panthers. I mean, just killed them. And the Panthers beat the Buccaneers a couple weeks ago, and which I know Tampa Bay is not that great, but they're not god awful either. So, you know, we always do this thing week to week where, okay, this team beats that team, that means that team should beat this team, and it doesn't work out that way because the matchups are different, strengths and weaknesses are different, and, you know, the difference between winning and losing in this league is, you know, it's not a whole lot. And the Ravens are a very weird but still a good example of that this year. I mean, they're one of only five teams in the Super Bowl era to hold a double-digit lead in their first nine games. And you look at the other four, the first four, they were all 8-1 or better. Well, the Ravens are 6-3. So, one, it speaks to the Ravens being a weird outlier in that way, and the fact that they blew three second-half leads that we all know and don't need to rehash again. But I think it also does speak to the changing nature of this league that, for me, it feels more and more as time goes on, the NFL feels a little more like the NBA, where you start seeing these runs. And I mean, the Ravens are a great example of this, where, you know, the 10-point lead or, you know, 13-point lead, whatever it might be. And, you know, we've seen some of these games that it's not over. And then before you know it, you know, it's tied or you're losing. So, you know, it kind of feels like how the NBA is, where, you know, you don't really need to pay attention until the last 8 minutes of the game. So
once you've blown a 35-14 lead, at that point, you're capable of blowing anything, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's why people were so nervous when Marcus Peters and Chuck Clark let the touchdown go, because they thought the guy was out of bounds, which, you know, I mean, again, I'm not going to make too big of a deal out of that, because they were still in control, but you don't want to see that.
Well, 3 weeks ago it was finish after they blew a game to the Giants, right?
Right. Sure. And I will say, you know, that bonehead play aside, they finished pretty well overall on Monday night. I mean, it's the first time all year that they outscored their opponent in the fourth quarter. So, you know, we're seeing this team make progress. Are they perfect? No. You know, are there things that they still need to clean up? Absolutely. You know, whether you want to talk about, you know, some of the clock management issues on the offensive side of the ball, or, you know, I'd still like to see a little more clarity as far as a third corner emerging, you know, and, you know, especially with maybe Marcus Peters not quite being back to pre-injury form yet. But, you know, these are discussions that every team, including Buffalo, including Kansas City, including, yes, undefeated Philadelphia, who deserves their props. They're undefeated. They're the best team in football right now. But, you know, even those perceived teams that are perceived to be elite, they still have some question marks. I mean, there's not a perfect team out there. So in that regard, yeah, we can talk about some of the questions that the Ravens have, but some of the questions that we were talking about 3, 4, 5 weeks ago have been either solved or are not nearly the same concern as they had been. So, you know, it's just a matter of keeping it going, getting healthy, taking good advantage of this bye week in terms of healing up, and coaches to do some self-scouting and adjusting, and, you know, someone like Roquan Smith getting in the defensive playbook even more and just becoming even more comfortable with this Ravens defensive system. You know, you do all those things and you get a little bit of luck along the way, then, you know, one, this team will definitely be playing in January. You know, I don't think they even need luck in that. They just don't want to have bad luck to do that. But I think they'll put themselves in position that they can make some noise and make a run. You know, I think this is certainly a team that's capable of doing that. And you have to be really encouraged by what we've seen over the last 3 weeks to put themselves at 6-3 in first place in the division.
One of the reasons they're going to get in is because all these other lousy teams, right? And the Colts doing weird. Like, I don't know what Jimmy Irsay's doing at this point, but like firing a coach in the middle of November, what was the point of that? And Jeff Saturday, this is an embarrassment. It's an embarrassment.
It is. And I'll be honest with you, while I agreed with the message, this is why what Jim Irsay has done here is why I wasn't ready to pat him on the back, but just because he spoke up about Daniel Snyder, because, I mean, it's not just that it, you know, it's a punchline. And I even joked about it. You know, are we sure he didn't mean to hire Sean O'Hara of NFL Network? Because I think we've even talked to him and joked about how those two look alike. And
once,
they've been...
once Matt Burke loses his election on Tuesday, he's available too. So,
but,
you know,
but for me, I mean, it's, first of all, it's just weird. I mean, the guy, he coached high school. I mean, I have friends who've coached high school football.
Why, you know, would he say yes to this? Why would he say, I'm not?
Because it's a chance to be an NFL head coach. I mean, I don't blame him for saying yes. I mean, it's a phenomenal opportunity for him. But and this goes back to what I was saying about, you know, this idea suddenly that Jim Irsay was some kind of conscience for the owners or the league. You just hired someone in a climate in which we've talked about assistants, minority or not minority, but how many assistants struggle to get job interviews? How many longtime assistants? And look, I know they're not going to hire, you know, someone that's an assistant for another team in November. There's no mechanism for that per se. But you think about how many qualified people, especially, you know, black coaches around the league that we've talked about this.
I mean, Marvin Lewis is sitting home. Bring him in for 8 weeks and bring in a real coach. Bring in. I'm just making Marvin up, not because, but
sure.
Bring in somebody who's a real NFL head coach.
It's an absolute slap in the face to the coaches that are currently on that staff, to the players that are currently on that roster. I mean, that press, first of all, they hold a press conference. They backed it up until it was happening during the start of Monday Night Football, which shameful, you know, because fewer people paid attention to it. Now more people will pay attention to what happened in the aftermath.
Well,
Tuesday,
you can
Wednesday,
have a 9
cetera.
A.M. press conference on Tuesday morning.
Well, but the thing was they kept backing it up. It was supposed to be, I think, 5 or 6, and then they backed it up to 7 and 8. I mean, it's just the whole thing is it's clown shoes. I mean, it's complete. It's a joke, and it's really beyond the comedic part of it because it is funny too in some ways, but it's really not. It's shameful, and it's really a slap in the face to any number of assistants, not just in Indianapolis, but across the league, who have really plotted and grinded and tried to work their way up the ladder. And how many minority candidates have, you know, been told, you know, either directly, indirectly, they're not qualified enough, they don't have enough experience. And you hire a guy who's never even been a head coach at the collegiate level. You know, it's a joke. And again, it's really insulting to the other people in that organization. And you know, hey, fire your coach. I mean, head coaches get fired in season all the time. You know, I'm not going to even fault them for that. You know, how much of it was Frank Reich's fault compared to other, you know, GM front office decisions, players not playing well. You know, it's, we know you can't fire the entire team. So the head coach or the GM tends to be the one that goes. And sometimes it's completely justified and other times it's a little unfair. But to proceed and to hire that coach and then to go on to justify and argue that the guy is qualified, it's a joke. And again, this is why I wasn't all that eager to be patting Jim Irsay on the back, just because he stated the obvious that Daniel Snyder isn't fit to be an NFL owner anymore. You know, just because he said it didn't mean that he suddenly becomes the, you know, the conscious of NFL owners. You know, I didn't really feel that 2 weeks ago when it happened. And after proceeding and doing what he's done with his football team since then, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's one of those things that if someone had told you that before the season, you wouldn't believe it. You would say, you know, that sounds like I saw some people equate it to WWE. And when Vince McMahon hires, you know, has a guest, a GM on the show, you know, and it's a character, right? That's a storyline, you know, but it feels preposterous even as a wrestling fan with kayfabe, you know, with some of those things that they do. But for this to actually be a real life thing, I mean, it's absurd. It's totally absurd.
Well, and for any of us that have covered the league, you say, well, he's a center in the league and he coached high school or whatever. I remember when the Capitals brought Dale Hunter down and he only had one tie in his pickup truck from 1986. And they were, you know, a guy that had never coached in the league. He's going to go coach. This isn't Stratomatic. This isn't Madden. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot that goes into this. These guys earn $10 million a year for a reason. This is sort of flaunting the whole thing.
I mean, it's bizarre. I mean, it really is bizarre. And again, like I said, it is a slap in the face. And, you know, there's a part of me that seriously really dislikes this. But just the comedic side of it, I mean, it's just, I mean, what would be the equivalent? I mean, you mentioned Matt Burke. I mean, you know, Matt Burke only played with the Ravens a few years, you know, but I don't know, like, this be like bringing in Ed Reed I mean, Ed Reed at least has a little bit of NFL coaching experience. He actually coached for a minute in Buffalo. You know, I mean, I just think of how preposterous this is to hire someone who doesn't even have college coaching experience. I mean, it's
Zach Gore's been working with the linebackers. That doesn't, for a couple of years, that doesn't make him qualified to be a head coach.
Way more qualified than Jeff Saturday, though.
It's
really weird. It's very strange. And again, for a league that has such a massive perception problem, and not just perception, just reality too, in terms of minority coaching hires and making sure very qualified minority head coaches and assistant coaches are getting opportunities to interview and opportunities to become a head coach. This is very problematic and very much a shameful move, and probably going to work out horribly. But I also wonder at this point in time, when you consider how bad Indianapolis has been and the fact that they need a franchise quarterback, I'm not going to lie, the thought of tanking, you know, when you do something like this and just say, well, let's just go all in. We'll make it weird, and you know, we'll lose out and we'll get the
Didn't they
number
do
one
that with
overall
was
pick.
Luck the first time around?
They did, and then they couldn't protect him, and he was so beat up that he ended up retiring. So I don't know. I mean, it's odd. It really is. But like I said,
How lucky they were to get Peyton Manning one time.
Well, hey, and that's, you know, yeah, they're lucky to take him and not Ryan Leaf, right? I mean, you know, the Patriots were lucky that, you know, that they only passed on Tom Brady, what, 5 times as opposed to 6 times like the rest of the league. And, you know, we've talked about it with the Ravens with Lamar Jackson. The Ravens were so brilliant in drafting Lamar Jackson that they wanted Hayden Hurst before they took Lamar Jackson. So, hey, there's always luck involved. But, yeah, this situation, I have nothing against Jeff Saturday personally. I think he's a pretty good analyst, has been a pretty good analyst at ESPN. But I just look at that. I saw the Adam Schefter's, I think he was the one who tweeted about it first. I know a couple other national reporters had it right after that, but I triple checked it. I'm just like, this can't be real, right? This has to be like a fake account or something like that. And it was real as rain. And I still can't believe it. Even talking about it in the days that followed Monday.
It's almost like what qualifies Robert Griffin III to be an analyst. But yeah, I don't know, but he's probably more qualified for that. Now, I was watching ESPN the other day. Boy, the pregame shows are awful. I mean, I'm trapped at home. You talk about, you know, they've locked the minority media member out for 26 years. I'm watching on TV. Man, the pregame shows are just awful. I love the NFL. Give me some beef for crying out loud. We'll complain about that. Anything you want to say about the Astros winning? Because I want to give you a little bit of oxygen to talk about that here to begin the week.
Fantastic World Series. You know, we've talked at length about Houston and the Astros and Altuve and Bregman and everything that happened in 17 and 20 and all that. I feel really good for Dusty Baker, and I feel really good for Trey Mancini. And I've said to you, I mean, you know, I have a soft spot for the Phillies, you know, not just my brother-in-law and, you know, what he's gone through this year with some health things, but also my grandfather, who was a Phillies fan before the Browns moved to Baltimore and became the Orioles in 1954. So, you know, they were always a team that I followed more so in the National League. You know,
when the Browns moved to Baltimore, I'm like, oh, the other Browns. Oh, okay.
The St. Louis Browns. Yeah. Well, my grandfather was born in 1923. So, you know,
Johnny Berardino Browns. Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, that they were a fantastic story. You know, they had their opportunities. I mean, they go up 2-1 and you look, it was sitting right there for them, and you know, they couldn't do it. But, you know, Houston, you know, for as much as there was some hand-wringing about the playoff, you know, the expansion and seeding and the best team not always winning, well, the Astros, in the end, they were the best team in the American League, and they were the last team standing at the end of the year, champions of baseball. So enjoyed it. But now the real work begins for the Orioles as the offseason commences, and hopefully you and I will have a lot more to talk about with an offseason of making moves and, you know, maybe making some trades, maybe some free agent signings. Who knows? Hopefully much more activity than, oh, waiting for the Orioles to sign Freddie Galvis or, you know, or someone of that nature. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. And do want to also give a nod, Brandon Hyde, officially a finalist for, you know, manager of the year. And to no surprise, Adley Rutschman, a finalist for AL Rookie of the Year. We'll see how that plays out. But no surprise for on either front there, but both of those individuals very deserving, and certainly rooting for Brandon Hyde to be manager of the year. He deserved it after a terrific year. And now we get into the off season and the hot stove that hopefully will be much warmer than it's been in recent years for the Orioles.
Give DeGrom the money. Let's go, Mike Elias. I am Nestor. He is Luke. He's going to be out in Owings Mills as soon as they let him. They don't let me go to Owings Mills anymore. We'll see how that works out. It's bye week. It's relaxed time a little bit. The Ravens are 6-3. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake tour around here next Friday at Pappas up in Cockeysville. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'll be having some Ravens scratch-offs to give away for y'all, as well as Window Nation and Goodwill. Had a nice $50 winner on our Ravens scratch-off last week up in Greenmount Station. Had an unbelievable day at Drug City in Dundalk last week. If you haven't heard, I sit down with Gina Schock from the Go-Go's, as well as some other just great stuff we did over at Drug City. One of my favorite Crab Cake. Crab Cake Tour is improving, too. Just much like the Ravens season, it's getting better each and every week. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.